This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مَثَلُ الَّذِينَ يُنْفِقُونَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ كَمَثَلِ حَبَّةٍ أَنْبَتَتْ سَبْعَ سَنَابِلَ فِي كُلِّ سُنْبُلَةٍ مِئَةُ حَبَّةٍ وَاللَّهُ يُضَاعِفُ لِمَنْ يَشَاءُ وَاللَّهُ وَاسِعٌ عَلِيمٌ الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, They shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you. Chair defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Forty-six years ago, the people of Iran delivered a resounding no to the Shah. Despite his profound aspiration for modernism and progress, his rule left behind a legacy of widespread poverty, runaway inflation, and systematic corruption. While Iran was equipped with nuclear power plants, the majority of its people were deprived of access to clean drinking water. One of the central goals of the Islamic Revolution was to enact social justice within the country and ensure the equitable distribution of resources across the nation. It sought to transform Iran into a land where wealth was not confined to a privileged few, where natural resources were not plundered by foreigners, and where the creation of wealth would pave the way for a brighter future. A realistic and impartial examination of the current state of Iranian society, juxtaposed with conditions prior to the Islamic Revolution, reveals a compelling truth that the Islamic Republic, despite grappling with numerous challenges such as war and sanctions, has achieved remarkable milestones across diverse domains, including political, economic, social, cultural, scientific, technological, military, and beyond. Under the Shah, Iran's history marked a pivotal turning point due to a lack of coherent economic strategy, overdependence on oil exports, and a single-product economy. This era saw capitalism intertwined with imperialism, decimation of agriculture, reliance on consumer industries, and persistently high unemployment. Public health, scientific research, and education were neglected, while military expenditures soared and extravagant royal spending had no limits. Back then, Iran transitioned from self-sufficiency in food production to a major importer of agricultural goods, spurring massive urban migration and worsening unemployment. The Shah's excessive militarization, fueled by insatiable thirst for power, underscored the significant national wealth squandered as Iran became America's regional enforcer. General Hassan Rastegarpanah serves as the head of the National Center for Sustainable Security at Imam Hussein University.
تا اون زمانی که انقلاب شد ما چیزی بالغ بر 30,000 مستشار نظامی داخل ایران داشتیم.
Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, there were over 30,000 foreign military advisors in the country, which imposed significant cost on the nation. At that time, the United States supplied advanced fighter jets to Iran, such as the F-5 and F-16, placing the Iranian Air Force among the most advanced in the region. However, it was crucial to note that Iran was heavily reliant on foreign military advisors. Iranian forces did not even have the authority or knowledge to repair aircraft parts, being allowed only to replace them. These limitations were designed to keep the Iranian military completely dependent on foreign forces, clearly hindering its ability to defend the country's sovereignty.
The Islamic Revolution has ushered in a wealth of economic accomplishments. It has safeguarded the nation's underground resources from foreign exploitation, empowered villages with new opportunities, and modernized urban infrastructure and services. The revolution has bolstered development through initiatives like training skilled human resources, constructing dams, and expanding transportation and port networks. Furthermore, it has highlighted essential key indicators of economic growth, such as gross national product, and reinforced and broadened educational institutions at all levels, all while pursuing a path toward economic self-sufficiency. During our visit to the bustling heart of Tehran, we explored Puyandegan Rah Saadat Company, an innovative Iranian firm specializing in the design and manufacturing of medical devices, ranging from vital signs monitors to digital thermometers. Our first encounter was with the CEO, Mr. Reza Yaqubzadeh, who shared valuable insights about the company's mission and achievements.
Our company was established in 1998. The co-founders, including myself, were classmates at university. We studied electronics, became engineers, and naturally wanted to create our own company. After discussions with the Minister of Health, we realized we could manufacture certain components related to medical equipment. We successfully pursued this and approached the Ministry of Health again to propose that we could fully produce some medical devices ourselves. They welcomed this suggestion, and with their support, we founded the company. From the very beginning, we committed to developing products that could be exported to Europe. It was an ambitious goal for us, being under 30 years old and having no financial resources, but with relentless effort, we turned this dream into reality.
In the 46 years since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran has achieved significant progress in economic, industrial, agricultural, and technological sectors. Despite facing sanctions and economic crises, Iran has established itself as a key player in the region. Today, it attracts major countries eager to strengthen economic ties, particularly in oil, gas, agriculture, automotive, and technology sectors, even amidst ongoing international challenges. Mr. Yaqubzadeh emphasized that despite numerous challenges, their products have successfully penetrated international markets.
2 years after founding the economy, we decided to obtain European standards for our products because this would enable us to export to over 80 countries worldwide. Since that year, all the medical equipment we produce complies with European standards, despite numerous challenges, including economic fluctuations and harsh sanctions against our country. We export our products both directly and indirectly. In some countries, we use our brand, while in others, we partner with local brands, primarily due to the sanctions imposed by the U.S. Currently, we have production lines in countries like Sweden and Turkey, exporting our products to many other countries from there. Additionally, we have set up production lines in Iraq, Indonesia, and Belarus. But we market these products under different brands.
Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran's GDP stood at approximately $60 billion. In the decades since, this figure has surged to around $450 billion in recent years. While sanctions and economic crises have impacted growth rates, Iran has nonetheless achieved significant economic output. Following the establishment of the Islamic Republic, Iran successfully maintained and developed its vast capacities for oil and gas extraction and export. Today, it is recognized as one of the largest producers of oil and gas globally and remains a key exporter in the world. Prior to the revolution, Iran primarily exported oil to Western countries. However, post-revolution, it has diversified its exports, supplying oil to nations such as China, India, Japan, Turkey, and several Central Asian countries. Iran has not only advanced its oil industry, but has also made significant strides in automotive, technology, space exploration, energy production, and pharmaceutical manufacturing. Remarkably, exports from knowledge-based companies reached $2 billion in 2023, reflecting a threefold increase from the previous year. This surge underscores the growing importance of knowledge-based enterprises in Iran's economy, signaling promising developments on the horizon.
During the first year and a half of the COVID-19 pandemic, vaccines had not yet been produced. So patients with COVID-19 needed special care to recover. Hospitals required specific equipment for the care of these patients, such as COVID-19 diagnostic kits, oxygen concentrators, monitoring devices, and ventilators. The most expensive and complex device for treating COVID-19 patients was the ventilators. Fortunately, our country faced no issues in obtaining this equipment, as technology-driven companies had previously worked in these areas. For example, our company began manufacturing ventilators in 2019, and we introduced ventilators to the market in 2017, obtaining European standards in 2018. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit, we were asked to produce 3,000 ventilators to supply to hospitals, and we did successfully.
While oil remains a significant source of foreign exchange, non-oil exports have surged over the past four decades, encompassing petrochemical products, steel, cement, dried fruits, carpets, handicrafts, and agricultural goods like dates and saffron. In 1978, Iran's non-oil exports totaled 3.3 million tons, valued at $500 million. While imports stood at 12 million tons, costing around $10 billion. Following the Islamic Revolution, non-oil exports grew to $800 million by 1979, despite imports remaining stable at $10 billion. However, during the early years of the imposed war, non-oil exports fell to $600 million in 1980. As the conflict waned, exports rebounded to $1.2 billion in 1988, with imports totaling $9 billion. While touring the company, we had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Mahmoud Reza Mirati, the deputy CEO and a co-founder of Puyandegan Rah Saadat Company.
یه محصول خیلی استراتژیک نواقی که ما طراحی کردیم بحث محصول ونتیلاتوره.
One of the strategic products we designed and produced is the ventilator. This device is in fact the second generation of the model we manufacture.
Despite the heavy sanctions imposed by the United States against the Islamic Republic, Iran has continuously sought to expand its trade with aligned countries, neighboring states, and some African nations. Among the significant initiatives in this regard has been the signing of trade agreements with various countries. One of the most important of these contracts is the free trade agreement between Iran and the Eurasian Economic Union, which is expected to go into effect at the beginning of 2025 after going through various stages. This agreement will facilitate free trade between Iran and countries such as Russia, Armenia, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, and Belarus. As we toured the company, our attention was drawn to a striking world map adorned with stars, representing their global reach.
Let me show you this map. It represents the world. and the points you see denote the countries to which we export our products. We export to over 50 countries worldwide. As you can see, some points are marked in red, while others are in blue. The blue stars indicate that our products in those countries are marketed under other brands. For example, in countries like Sweden, Germany, Belarus, Italy, Turkey, Iraq, Indonesia, and Brazil, our products are produced and sold under different brands. We also export our products to South America and Africa and Asia. Our product standards are so high that we could export to the United States. However, since the U.S. has prohibited imports from Iran, we do not export there. We even had American clients and had set up contracts for selling our products to them. But due to sanctions, those efforts did not reach completion.
Mr. Merati guided us through various sections of the company showcasing the design studios and the area where different components are molded.
We have over 800 types of molds here and produce various components, ranging from very small to very large parts. We manufacture the components to our devices ourselves for both economic and strategic reasons. All the materials we use for production come from specific petrochemical sources that are fire resistant, which is one of the international standards we adhere to. Additionally, all our components, whether electronic or non-electronic, are environmentally friendly, which is crucial for exporting to Europe.
In our conversation, Mr. Merati drew a compelling comparison between the situation before and after the Islamic Revolution.
Products manufactured in our company are based on our own technology. In other words, we do not transfer technology from abroad, but rather export our technology to countries like Germany, Italy, Turkey, Iraq, and Belarus. To compare, before the revolution, we had not undertaken any work in medical equipment manufacturing. After the revolution, and especially after the Iraqi-imposed war against us, we entered the medical equipment sector. Until that time, the entire market was dominated by foreign products. Thanks to the efforts of domestic companies, now over 80 medical products in the country are Iranian-made, with very high quality and significantly lower prices compared to foreign counterparts. The variety of Iranian products in the medical equipment sector is such that we can fully equip operating rooms with them.
Gradually, as the seasoned engineer spoke, I felt a sense of pride in being in a company entirely created by Iranians, dedicated to improving the well-being of both locals and people worldwide. We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Al Arabiya, Iran deploys AI-equipped missiles during drills. The Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has deployed missiles featuring artificial intelligence technology during military drills in the Persian Gulf. The IRGC's naval force fired Qa'im and Almas missiles equipped with artificial intelligence from advanced Mohajer 6 and Ababil 5 drones, the Irna's state news agency said. Qa'im and Almas are both precision-guided missiles developed domestically by the Iranian Defense Ministry. Irna. IRGC unveils new underground missile city in South Iran. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has unveiled a new underground base housing cruise missiles designed to target destroyers in strategic southern waters. IRGC Chief Commander Major General Hossein Salami visited the missile city on Iran's southern shores on Saturday. During the visit, Salami inspected the combat readiness of the IRGC Navy's missile units at the new facility. The upgraded missile stations in the subterranean base are also equipped to counter electronic warfare and can be operational in the shortest time possible. This is the third underground missile base unveiled by the IRGC in less than a month. Tehran Times. IRGC unveils highly advanced Gaza drone during major drill. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps Aerospace Force has revealed its latest technological achievement, the Shahed 149 Gaza drone, during an expensive military exercise known as Great Prophet Authority. The Shahed 149 Gaza stands out with its impressive 21-meter wingspan and payload capacity of 500 kilograms, allowing it to carry a variety of advanced munitions, including precision-guided bombs and surveillance equipment. The drone's capabilities include a cruising space of 215 kilometers per hour, an impressive flight endurance of up to 35 hours, and the ability to reach altitudes of 10,668 meters, making it highly suited for both reconnaissance and strike missions. Its operational range spans 4,000 kilometers, and it can strike targets within a 1,000-kilometer radius. With the ability to operate at high speeds, the Shahed 149 is poised for swift response in strategic military operations. Caliber: Iran's military readiness, Rear Admiral Sayari vows to confront any threat. The Chief of Staff and Deputy Commander of the Iranian Army Force for Coordination Affairs, Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayari, has stated that the country's military is fully prepared to confront any threat with all its might. As a regional power, Iran plays a leading and influential role capable of shaping developments across the region, he emphasized. Speaking about the role of defense diplomacy, Sayari noted that it is an integral component of Iran's military strength. Defense diplomacy is one of the capabilities of the armed forces of the country, so defense diplomacy is one of the components of power, he remarked. The admiral also pointed out that strengthening defense diplomacy increases the country's ability to establish greater interactions and cooperation with other nations worldwide. Rear Admiral Sayari also highlighted Iran's extensive participation in joint military exercises with other countries, underscoring the nation's growing international influence. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Over the past 46 years, the Islamic Republic of Iran has also made significant strides in defense and military sectors, enduring extensive Western sanctions. Today, Iran has emerged as one of the world's foremost military powers, showcasing advanced capabilities in the production of defense equipment, from cutting-edge drones soaring in the skies to submarines navigating the depths of oceans. Although Iran had military industries since 1941 during both the reigns of Reza Shah and Mohammad Reza Shah, there was little reliance on domestic military capabilities, with a strong focus on importing weapons from abroad. As a result, Iran's military industries were limited to producing a few types of ammunition and assembling a few types of weapons. In terms of maintenance, Iranian technicians were only allowed to replace the most basic components of imported weaponry. Arms purchases in Iran during the 1970s were accompanied by significant buzz, and the term regional gendarme became popular in the propaganda surrounding these procurements. However, the reality revealed itself in wartime. After the Shah fled Iran, despite substantial investments he had made in certain military sectors, such as the Air Force, that force's readiness was undermined due to its heavy dependency on American advisors and technicians, especially in the early days of the Iraqi-imposed war. Almost a year after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein launched an invasion on Iran. At the time, the Iranian nation was struggling to procure even the basic necessities such as barbed wire, as Iran's military was entirely dependent on foreign support during the reign of Mohammad Reza Shah. When he fled, that support evaporated.
In response, the leadership in Iran resolved to develop a domestic weapons manufacturing capability. Today, Iran exports a diverse array of weaponry to dozens of countries, with some members of the United Nations Security Council becoming enthusiastic customers of Iranian arms. General Rastegor Panoh remarked that Iranians demonstrated remarkable resilience, quickly recovering from initial challenges thanks to the renewed sense of self-reliance fostered by the Islamic Republic.
At the onset of the Iraq-Iran war, the Iranian military managed to rebuild itself rapidly. After the revolution, the military was able to repair aircraft that had been grounded during the conflict and bring them back into operation. It was during this time that Iranians realized they could repair aircraft independently without the permission or guidance of foreign advisors. Prior to the revolution, pilots trained in countries like the United States and the UK, but post-revolution, Iranian pilots began receiving training at home, showing remarkable performance during the war. Today, in various military exercises, we witness the high levels of military and defensive capability our armed forces possess, achieved without any foreign support and, in fact, despite the pressures and sanctions imposed by the West.
Years after the fall of the Shah, Iran has reached a high level of self-sufficiency in defense industries. The country now manufactures whatever it needs to defend its national sovereignty against any threats, from different types of drones and missiles to different types of aircraft, destroyers, and submarines. The country ranks fifth globally in the repair of aircraft and helicopters and is the second in the world to manufacture composite helicopter blades, highlighting significant progress in its aerospace industry. Iran is also recognized as the 10th country to produce submarines and is capable of repairing various naval vessels, hovercraft, high-speed boats, and flying boats. Moreover, the production of armored vehicles and tanks, along with self-sufficiency in a wide array of light, semi-heavy, and heavy weapons, further demonstrate its advancements. The development of telecommunications industries, including a range of wireless communications, alongside advancements in optics, has led to the manufacturing of conventional and night vision cameras, with some products being exported to 32 countries worldwide. Needless to say, a substantial portion of these technologies had been exclusive to a limited number of advanced nations around the world. Today, the Islamic Republic of Iran boasts a diverse range of ballistic and precision-guided missiles. Iran's missile achievements extend beyond ballistic and long-range missiles. The country has also strengthened its air defense capabilities by developing and producing missiles to secure its skies. Currently, Iran is among the few nations in the world capable of producing advanced anti-missile defense systems based on domestic capabilities. The most significant of these systems is the Bavar 373, tasked with protecting vital locations, including certain nuclear sites. Another notable air defense system is the indigenous Sevom Khordad, which gained recognition by successfully destroying the advanced American Global Hawk drone in 2019.
جنگ تحمیلی که پذیرفته شد قطعنامه وارد عرصه جدید شدیم تا به حال رسیدیم.
After the end of the imposed war and the acceptance of the ceasefire, Iran's military forces entered a new phase. Iran recognized that simply having manpower was not enough for national defense. It also needed cutting-edge technology in defense matters. Initially, we sought assistance from other countries, and while some provided help, many did not. We began by engaging in reverse engineering, and now we have reached a point where we can confidently state that IRGC's ground-to-ground missiles can hit targets precisely within a range of 2,000 kilometers. This capability is extremely frightening and unacceptable to Iran's adversaries and is unimaginable for them.
Iran has also developed expertise in building destroyers, unveiling several domestically produced vessels like Jamoran, Sahand, and Dana. The Iranian Navy also manufactures submarines, hovercraft, marine diesel engines, and torpedoes. In addition to routine missions supporting oil tankers, its ships play a global role in ensuring maritime security. Today, Iran has succeeded in manufacturing various radar-evading drones with long flight endurance, armed with precision-guided bombs and missiles, placing it among the top five countries globally in radar-evading drone technology. The growth of Iran's drone power has become a focal point for its adversaries, who attempt to hinder the continued development of these capabilities by accusing Iran of involvement in the Ukraine conflict. Now, thanks to the Islamic Revolution, Iran finds itself not only free from military dependency, but also poised to advance towards the creation of specialized and practical weapons. Iran has demonstrated its ability to construct weapons with distinct features, from drones to ocean-going vessels of the Martyr Soleimani class, all designed with expertise held exclusively by Iranian specialists. Iranian weapons have established their own brand, and the nation has transitioned from dependency to a position where its productions can alter global dynamics. Today, Iran is no longer a weapon importer. It confidently participates in major global exhibitions to find international customers for its products.
Many countries that once sold us weapons are now requesting to buy Iranian missiles and drones. We have achieved self-sufficiency in defense equipment and are exporting it to various countries, which has become a significant source of revenue for us. I can confidently say that none of the countries in the region can compare to us in terms of defense capabilities. We are significantly ahead of them. While we do not possess nuclear weapons, our military and defensive capabilities are so advanced that we can deliver a strike against our enemies that could be as damaging as a nuclear bomb if necessary. Today, our drones easily operate over American naval vessels, gathering crucial intelligence that allowed us to monitor the movements of U.S. ships in the region in real time. This high and undeniable capability is a testament to our advancements in defense technology.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Until next time, take care.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Seven, barometric pressure.
We come to you, and O God, name that thou art our only king.
You are listening to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners. Welcome to another episode of Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasir Ibrahim. One of the important figures within the Islamic Revolution, before and after, was a personality known as Dr. Mustafa Chamran. Dr. Mustafa Chamran was a student in America was a student studying, if I'm not mistaken, electrical engineering in one of the universities in America. His thesis is still available. It's online. You can actually go and get it. It was very influential, especially within the eight-year imposed war that Iraq imposed and started with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Not only did it was Iraq, it was the entire world against Iran, something that I claim and many claim was actually World War III, but in the whole world against one nation, not in that the world was divided into two. It was one of the only places that you would see that East and West came together against a nation that said neither East nor West, neither East nor West. So this is that particular individual, and his biography is something that, you know, we would encourage each and every one of us to read to find out. He was also very influential in the founding of the resistance movement in Lebanon, together with Sayyid Ahmed Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh. So this particular book is titled Human Being and God. It is a compilation of some of the lectures of Dr. Mustafa Chamran and was translated into English. And we will speak more about the book and the contents of the book and the breakdown and structure of the book in our next segment. So please stay tuned.
Why do we read books in the first place? What are books good for?
We read books because we don't want to reinvent the wheel, if you will.
We'd better take advantage of human cultural and intellectual heritage, particularly related to our daily activities, such as our physical, mental, spiritual, or even religious health.
We can't ignore the past thoughts and experiences. To do so, we need to boost our bookshelf.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The book that we would like to, or we liked or have introduced to our dear listeners is titled Human Being and God. It is a compilation of four lectures by Dr. Mustafa Chamran, Shaheed Mustafa Chamran, rahmatullah alayh, on obviously human being, the relationship with human being and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and so forth. The book was originally written in Persian, in Farsi, with the title Insan wa Khuda. And it was translated and edited by Dr. Ishaq Qasim Fernandez and was published by the International Resistance Publishers that in the year 2023. It does not say where it was published. So anyway, this is the book that we would like to introduce to our dear listeners. But the first part of the book being the editor's preface, that is Dr. Ishaq Qasim Fernandez. Then it goes into a short biography of Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Chamran, Imam Khomeini's message on the martyrdom of Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Chamran, the introduction to the lectures, and then he goes into the four lectures themselves. The four lectures themselves obviously dealing with the concept of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Man, the relationship between Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and man, and the Khaliq and the Makhluk, the Creator and the Created, and so on and so forth. So this basically is the breakdown of this particular book, and hopefully inshallah in our next segment we will read a portion of this book for the benefit of our dear listeners. So please stay tuned.
Sacred texts we have received to help us understand where we came from and where we are going as a human race are most rich in helping us find our direction. They narrate stories of our past, but where have they brought us? Where are their messages now? Are we the people of belief, or have we become the people of the boxes? Is there wisdom trapped in our bookshelves? Bookshelves, bookshelves, bookshelves.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to our program Bookshelf with me, Brother Yasser Ibrahim. The book that we have introduced to our dear listeners was titled Human Being and God. It is a compilation of four lectures by Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Chamran. It was translated by Brother Ishaq Qasim Fernandez and published by the International Resistance Publication. So we'll be reading from the first lecture. Obviously, best place to start is from the beginning. So the first lecture, in the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. My Lord, open my breast for me. Make my task easy for me. Remove the hitch from my tongue so that they may understand my speech. This is the dua of Musa alayhi salam when he was going towards Fir'aun. And it's something that is recommended for all of us to recite before giving a speech, before taking an exam also, before talking. This is one of the du'as of the Qur'an, or the Qur'anic du'as that are highly recommended to recite. The du'a of Musa alayhi salam before going to see Fir'aun. It seems that I will be at the service of my friends for few nights in a row, and I will try to discuss some topics. Tonight, my discussion is on a fundamental topic about the basis of our philosophy and faith. As you know, in our opinion, God, Allah, the Spirit and the unseen world are the basis of monotheism and Islamic philosophy. Therefore, belief in these facts is fundamental and basic for us. And whoever does not believe in these principles cannot accept the ideology and principles of Islam. There are different ways to reach this truth. Some people try to reach this truth through logic, through philosophy, through science, through experiments. And I feel that the discussion I will start tonight and will attempt in the best possible way to concentratedly clarify, concretely clarify these facts to the listeners that such things exist. Limitation of scientific knowledge. As you know, our knowledge is not enough and cannot understand God, the metaphysical world, and the spirit. There is no doubt that the limits and limitations of knowledge do not allow objects beyond science to come within the scope of experience. Therefore, another way is necessary. In order to achieve this basic purpose, we start from the human being. We say that the human being is God's representative on earth. He is the manifestation of God on this land and water. Therefore, if we know the human being and recognize his strength and weaknesses, his strength and limits, maybe he will be able to achieve our aim to understand about the spirit, God, and the metaphysical world. Therefore, our method and approach is to try to know the human being and know these facts with the experiences that deal with the daily life of this human being. In order to know this human being, I will first present a theory and viewpoint to my friends, and then I will try to prove this theory with experience. Therefore, that what I am going to mention will be a foundation and basis for our philosophical discussion in the future, and it is related to knowing the human being. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to understand ourselves. As the famous hadith goes, Man arafa nafsa faqad arafa rabbah. He knows himself, knows his Lord. And hopefully, inshallah, make us of those who fall in the path of Shaheed Dr. Mustafa Chamran. Inshallah, until next time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program Bookshelf on Iran Radio with Sheikh Yasir, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Much like the Gaza Strip, Israeli occupation forces have imposed a total siege on the West Bank city of Jenin, deploying hundreds of soldiers, including snipers, since the start of their offensive in the occupied West Bank of the River Jordan. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The English website of Al Mayadeen Television Network has covered the story and tells us more. Ahmed Abdul Hakim Shakir Saadi, a 14-year-old teenager, was assassinated by an Israeli drone strike on 1st of February in the eastern neighborhood of Jenin, a city in the occupied West Bank of the River Jordan. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, the strike occurred at around 5:30 p.m. local time in the courtyard of the Saadi family's home in eastern Jenin. The attack also claimed the life of Ahmad's older brother, Tamam Saadi, 27 years old, a nurse whose involvement in peace initiatives added a layer of tragedy to his death. The cold-blooded killings took place during an Israeli military offensive in the northern occupied West Bank, part of a so-called Operation Iron Wall, after the military defeat in Gaza. Ahmad and Tamam's brutal killing brings the number of Palestinians assassinated by the Israeli military in the northern occupied West Bank since the start of 2025 to over 70. Ahmad was among 11 Palestinian children martyred in the occupied West Bank this year, drawing sharp criticisms from human rights activists who say the Israeli regime's acts of aggression in the occupied West Bank mirror its conduct in the Gaza Strip's 15-month-long genocidal campaign. Of the 11 children martyred in the occupied West Bank this year so far, 7 were assassinated in Israeli drone strikes, while 4 others were shot and martyred with live rounds. As of 8th of February, the Israeli assaults have dramatically escalated in the occupied West Bank, particularly concentrated in the city of Jenin, which has recorded the highest death toll at 38, followed by Tubas with 15, Nablus with 6, and Tulkarm with 5. As the death toll in the occupied West Bank, particularly in the city of Jenin, continues to rise with children as the main victims, activists have taken to social media sites to sound alarm bells. The hashtag All Eyes on Jenin has been trending on X, formerly known as Twitter, as Jenin turns into another Gaza Strip. On 21st of January, Israel's military, police and domestic spy agency, the Shin Bet, launched a large-scale open-ended offensive in Jenin and its refugee camp. The offensive has since expanded to other areas in the northern occupied West Bank, including Tulkarm and Tamun, south of Tubas. Much like in the Gaza Strip, Israeli occupation forces have imposed a total siege on the city of Jenin and its refugee camp, deploying hundreds of soldiers, including snipers, since the start of their offensive in the region. We continue with the Al Mayadeen Television Network's coverage of this story. Following the launch of Israel's offensive on 21st of January, a wave of mass detentions swept the occupied West Bank. Dozens of Palestinians were seen being detained by Israeli military. On 22nd of January, Israeli occupation forces escalated their deadly raid on the city of Jenin, destroying infrastructure and forcibly displacing around 2,000 local people. Describing the forced displacement inflicted by the Israeli military, Khalil Houli from the city of Jenin and its refugee camp was quoted as saying, "We left with only the clothes on our backs, leaving everything behind." The offensive also saw Israeli military bulldozers razing key streets a day after ground and airstrikes massacred at least 10 local Palestinians across the Jenin governorate. Jenin's governor, Kamal Abu Arub, told the media, "The occupation army has bulldozed all the roads leading to the city of Jenin refugee camp and Jenin government hospital. There is shooting and explosions." Israeli raids have also forced the displacement of several families. Roland Friedrich, director of UNRWA's affairs in the occupied West Bank, said on X, "Some 2,000 families displaced since mid-December. UNRWA has been unable to provide full services to the refugee camp at this time." The ongoing Israeli military offensive has severely disrupted life in the northern occupied West Bank, restricting access to essential provisions, including healthcare and food. Most children have been unable to attend school or venture out freely. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese, condemned Israel's escalating assault on the city of Jenin, referring to it as a death machinery. Francesca Albanese warned, "If it is not forced to stop, Israel's genocide of Palestinians will not be confined to the Gaza Strip." Palestinian human rights groups have also raised alarm over the expansion of Israeli military offensive in the occupied West Bank of the River Jordan, now in its fourth week.
Thank you.